Said, every child is an artist. The problem is how to remain one once he grows up. Even though some of us may dispute that we ourselves are artists, we all have gifts. Each of us has been given a creative spirit. Whether we write poetry, prose, or music, draw or paint, sew, quilt, knit, or crochet, create from clay, design our homes and gardens, create a meal, take photographs, nurture the sick, or raise a child. We are all blessed with creativity. From Joan Chittister's book, The Benedictine Rule, she says this, without the artist to show us the beauty of the world around us, we lose sight of the beauty of God as well. The function of the artist is to make the transcendent visible, to touch the soul, to enshrine beauty so that we may learn to see it, and to make where we live places of wonder. We're lucky to have a wonderful cadre of artists here in this fellowship. 9 brave souls have volunteered to share with us today their own creative process, path, successes, and failures, with an eye sometimes focused on spiritual connection. Please welcome our artists as they come up individually or all together or in whatever order they choose. I have no idea. And please feel free, artists, to use either this microphone or that microphone if you want to walk around and point. Okay? So let's welcome Betts to kick it off.
Well, I didn't ask permission, but I let Cheryl know that I didn't bring anything to show, and I'm not going to talk about my own creativity because I made a great discovery yesterday. I'm a Rotarian, and our magazine came for September, had an article called The Age of Invention. Think you're not the creative type? Just wait. Here it is, in a nutshell. As a culture, we embrace the notion that innate creativity exists in a purer and more potent state during childhood and diminishes as we grow older. A growing body of research suggests the opposite. There's a scientific basis for this. There really are 2 types of human intelligence. Fluid intelligence is the part of our brain that solves problems using contents of our working memories. As we age, our fluid intelligence does degrade. We hold less information in our minds, we don't process that information as quickly, and we lose our ability to focus. This is why we associate aging with loss of creativity. Here's the good news. There is a second form of intelligence called crystallized intelligence. It's more like your overall bank of knowledge and experience. This only gets larger as you get older. If you're a theoretical physicist, you're probably going to do your most creative work in your 20s because you rely on fluid intelligence. But for a novelist or composer or painter or medical researcher, you can expect that your creative work may continue to improve as you age because your attention broadens. You're seeing more of the big picture, making the connections between different aspects of your life. As the brain grows older, it comes to resemble the creative brain in one other crucial manner. We stop being so self-conscious. We no longer feel the same urgent need to impress others, to please them, to abide the social expectations that might plague younger people. This disinhibition enables people to take chances without fear of failure or humiliation, a risk-taking mentality that is a central prerequisite to creative work. I'm so glad we have crystallized intelligence. Thank you.
Okay, I brought in this big pot. Pottery is one of the things I do, and I've decided that I just really do things because I enjoy keeping my hands busy. So crochet is a lot cleaner and easier to carry around. Gardening is a wonderful thing, but I started with pottery some, I don't know, 20, 25 years ago, and it has, it's been very rewarding to me. So I've got a little studio in the house, and I'm, when I'm ready to really get messy and covered with dirt, then I go out and start doing something with clay. And I like to use the wheel, but I can't throw anything on the wheel that's this big. So to do something this big, I made this in flower pots. I pieced it in a flower pot, and I did another one in a flower pot and put them together and through the neck. And I'm sure that in a previous life, I was a long-legged bird. I just love these birds. I just can't seem to get away from them. So it's always a pleasure to me to be able to do something with these beautiful birds that we see every day. So thank you.
Well, I'm Susan Baker, and I always wanted to be a writer. My parents said, no, you need to do something you can make a living at. So I became a lawyer and then a judge. But anyway, I still wrote. I used to write when I was, actually when I dropped out of college, I would write all these little crappy jobs I had. I would write about the people that would come into the bank or whatever. But So anyway, I published the first book in 1989 before I ran for office and used it as a political tool, which was great. And the next ones didn't come out till after I left office. And then I, so I've have a total of 8 books. 2 are nonfiction, 6 are fiction. These 3 here, Ledbetter Street, Unaware, and Death of a Prince, are set in Galveston. The other ones are set, I think they're all in Texas. I'm currently working on the sequel to Death of a Prince. I've already written it. I just need to polish it. It's set in Galveston, but the martyr and everything is in the Hill Country because I lived up there for a while. This one is a standalone women's fiction. Everything else is mystery suspense. And what I like about writing is that, well, when I started out, I read all these books about, because that's, you know, lawyers do that. I read all these books about writing, and I can't imagine somebody not reading about what you need to do to write a book. And I had all these fancy outlines and things, and I probably should do that now, except for the 3 or 4 that I'm working on now. I don't think I had an outline for any of them. Sometimes I'd write like a long synopsis. I just kind of go in the zone and with this idea, and then maybe I'll develop maybe some kind of an outline as I go along. But it's the strangest thing when I sit down, if my cat's not bothering me, I just start writing and I just get in this, it's not even a state of mind, I don't know where the hell I am. But I'll be writing along and these ideas will just pop into my head, and I work with this software called Scrivener, and it's got a place to put notes and synopses, so I'll just go over there on the computer and type what I'm thinking of. And the good thing about mystery suspense is you can kill people. And I have a couple I'm going to kill in one of the next books. And one of the other things I like is that I get tickled at my own stuff and I'll start laughing. I don't know if anybody laughs when they read the book, but it's just, that's where I sort of wake up and it's like, oh, what am I laughing at? It's pretty funny, some of the stuff I come up with. But it's, I don't know if it's a connection to me and God, a higher power, past lives, or what it is, but it's definitely not of this earth. It's definitely something between me and whatever's out there, and I highly recommend it to everybody. Just sit down and let everything go and just start writing, and it'll really just lift your spirits. It doesn't matter what it is. Just take off and let it go.
I brought some driftwood sculptures to show you. These are all collaborations between God and me. God does the hard part, and then I, you know, do a little bit extra. When I look for driftwood, I try to find something that I think will be aesthetic, or maybe already is aesthetic. This is a piece that I haven't done anything to. It's just the way I found it, and I will be doing something with this. I already have an idea of what I'm going to do with it. This is a piece that I just took away everything that was rotten and everything that wasn't hardwood and got it down to the bare bones, really, and that's what it ended up being. Then I had to figure out a way to display it, so I decided to hang it, which I kind of like. I like and then it's finished with mostly tung oil. I like to use tung oil, but you can use different kinds of oil, and some people use shoe polish or some other things like that. This is just getting down to the essence of whatever was there, and I didn't know what it was going to look like when I started. And I used dental picks and all kinds of, you know, all kinds of ways of getting down to the bare bones. This is a piece which I added to. The first thing I saw on the beach was this bottom part. If you think here on down, it reminded me of a bird of some sort. But then I thought, well, it needs a head. So I found a piece on the same beach that sort of reminded me of a bird's head, and these are attached. And it's attached with a nail, actually, and then filled in around it. And then I thought, well, this bird needs a breast, and so I found another piece, and I put the breast on. But this is not finished yet. It needs something else, and I'm still trying to figure out what it is. I think it needs an inlay of metal. So I'm thinking seriously about trying to do that. I haven't ever done that inlay work, but I'm thinking that's what I need to do with this. But it's not finished. And I've done several others, and I also brought a interesting book. I took a course from this woman, Patricia Bartlett, and she has lots of photographs in here and suggestions on how to do driftwood sculpture. So if you want to take a look at that, I'll leave it up here. Thank you.
I'm going to walk around to my side. This is my part of my creativity. Ooh, am I pulling this whole thing?
It's all right.
No, okay. When I moved here, I was homesick for 7 years. And it really was not an easy time. And the quilters pulled me out of the muck, as I call it. That's why I started quilting. And this little quilt was made for Cooper, my oldest grandson and only grandson. And the other one was made for Rinley. And she is 6 years old now. And then the little Christmas decorations, I started making them about 10, 15 years ago, and I send them over to Europe with the Christmas cards. And so, but my life was a lot better after I met quilters. It's a very knit, close-knit group, and it was great. And then, of course, I get these, I'm going to make it very short, I've got these, you mom, you know, you can do this for me. And I just finished it yesterday. I sent her, I said, I'll make it for you. This is the one and only one I make. I keep on remembering the toilet paper in the back seat of the car with a little hat. It's the Kleenex. The Kleenex comes out of the trunk. So, but the creativity is, I have a lot of fun and it's therapy for me. So it is definitely a spiritual. No. No. And that's not the only thing, because all their friends are getting babies. Can you make a receiving blanket? So it's all of that. So, but it's nice. I like to be. That is my way of creativity.
That's great.
You're gonna walk up.
Yeah.
Okay.
Hi, I'm Sharon Goodwin, and
I write poetry. I don't know anything about poetry. I've never studied poetry. I don't buy books of poetry, and sometimes people will give me books of poetry, and I don't read them. So don't do that. It's not my thing. It just so happens that when I started writing to get things out of my head and my heart, things that I was feeling great, either pain or joy or whatever, and I was so quiet. I know you don't believe that, but I was, as a young person, I was very, very, very shy. So at 16, I started writing, and it just came out as poetry, came out in that format. And so I've been writing since I was 16 years old. And I got over all my shyness, but it didn't have anything about to do with poetry. But poetry saved my life when I was suicidal a couple of times as a teenager in early 20s. I mean, there were lots of times in my life, and the deaths of my parents and all those kinds of things that you go through. Poetry helped me get through all of those things. So that's what I'm saying. We want Susan said, just write. I mean, it doesn't matter what you write or what it's about. Just have a pen and paper somewhere handy and just write down your idea. I've been doing that, and I wrote a poem after I'd written down this thing and had that little piece of paper on my coffee table for years before I finally wrote the poem about it. But it was there. I didn't have to go sit and look at it. I knew what it said. It was there. But it was, and then I wrote a poem about it. But I have a poem that I'm going to read to you today that I have only shared one time, and but it's been published in the Houston Chronicle. It was after I was, and it's not because of me, it was published in there. The minister at the Bay Area UU, when I was still in Lake City and down there, his name was Matt Tittle. And he had an article every week in the Chronicle. It was I think it might be listed on here. But anyway, I had written this, and I went and I showed it to him, and I said, I don't know what to do with this. And he said, and he just looked at it, and he got all excited, and he said, will you let me publish this in my article? I said, oh, sure. And he said, do you want to have your name on it or anonymous? And I said, well, no, put my name on it if it's going to be there. So he did. But this was done in 2009, so it was a long time ago. And this is I've never taken it out and read it to people, but I wanted to read it to you today, and also to tell you that article was to create conversation around religion and such. And so he put this in there, and I kept all the conversation that happened from that, and it was awesome, both good and bad, but nobody was cruel, but it was very, very interesting. And so I have all that stuff, and you're welcome to look at it if you want to. The title of this is I believe in God. I am not a Christian. I believe in God, pray and give thanks, grateful for all I have, never asking for things for myself, but for those I love and those in need. I am not a Christian. Not everyone is. Many non-Christians are also good people who love and give of themselves to help others. So why do many assume I must be a Christian just because I'm a good person? God loves those who love him, no matter how he is named. God is not Jesus to me. I was taught the Christian way. I talk to my grandchildren about Jesus, teaching kindness and forgiveness. I talk that talk and walk that walk, but I am not a Christian. There are millions like me around this world. We love and are loved, care deeply about our children, are proud of our country, no matter where we live. So, go ahead. So, all the rest of this are the conversations that went on because of the poem, which is really kind of cool. But I will say, I write for me. I never thought sharing anything that anybody would care until many years later, and I got involved in a little group, and I shared this one poem, and one of the women in the group started crying. And I went, oh, my God. You know, I actually got the feeling. Yeah. See, those hands. See, people always put my hands out of the way. Sorry. But it's... I have one other one. I just wanted, because this was a topic that actually came up in something else. The title of it is On Being Whole. And this was turned in for a graduate class. I expected it to be turned in, returned to me and given an incomplete. So because we were told to write a paper, and that was the title. But mine just came out the way things come out for me. But anyway, he didn't return it. He made me read it to the class and gave me an A, so it was okay. It was called On Being Whole. The essence of human competence lies within the depths of one's soul. For being a competent human being is merely a person that is whole. Being whole is not having all the right parts or having the ability to walk a line. It's not being able to see or hear or speak, but rather a joining of heart and mind. Competencies come from much teaching, but the essence of this human learning takes one to our inner hunger and the guidance of our heart's yearning. There is so much of life our hearts want to know, but the job of living takes our time as we grow. The following are some of the competencies I desire and the true learning that sets my heart on fire. To love without condition. To give without taking. To listen without anger. To learn without prejudice. To understand without judging. To see people without color. To hope without despair. To feel without touching. To forgive without remembering, to know without seeing, to care without pity, to speak without deceit, to believe without proof, to dream without limit. If all these things I learn in this one life I'm living, then one life is all I need to give back what I've been given. Thank you. Right. Just a-
I'm AJ Price, and I was given 3 minutes, and I think I'm going to use every second of them, so here we go. How creativity comes or doesn't. Sometimes I can summon it like ringing a bell for the butler. It greets me dutifully, calls me sir, and with a flourish places the gleaming stainless steel platter before me, lifting the lid on a perfectly complete and garnished, not half-baked idea. Sometimes it comes to me unsolicited, like a door-to-door salesperson, knocking abruptly, loudly, and startling me as I'm taking a shower at 10:40 a.m. Don't judge. By turns, afraid, embarrassed, and annoyed, I throw on a robe, make drippy fruit prints across the house, and holler through the door, "Now is not a good time! Leave your card!" I return to my shower and forget all about it. Sometimes it comes heroically, a baseballer sliding dramatically across the base. In a cloud of dirt, I meet my deadline just in time. The earthy red stripe on the white uniform is an emphatic underline for the idea announced through the PA, "Safe," and the crowd goes wild. But sometimes I wait up all night, anxious, sleepless, frantic, seething. "Where were you?" I will ask when it finally slinks in, surly and not at all sorry for missing curfew. Not offering any explanation for its absence, it storms upstairs, muttering, "None of the other muses have so many rules." It's not fair. The door slams shut and I scrap the project. In the documentary Chasing Coral, we see the desperate, ambitious, expensive undertaking of trying to record the coral bleaching, this death of almost one-third of the Great Barrier Reef that occurred only in 2016. With Citizens Climate Lobby and another organization kind of co-hosted a free screening of this at the library recently, and it was pretty astounding. I'm sure some of you have seen it. And if you haven't, I'm trying not to do too much of a spoiler, but Our oceans are taking the brunt of global warming, and like a fever in the body, a couple of degrees can mean the difference between health and death. Therefore, the time crunch was real as the documentarians suffered many defeats as their ingenious special equipment failed in the salty aquatic conditions. From having to shave plastic from the casing to meet airport requirements, to a completely waterlogged electronic circuit board from an unforeseen leak, each time they had to summon creative forces again with less hope and more time pressure. This flighty, flaky nature of creativity has an impact on spirituality. Creative people learn to rely on serendipity, to put faith in that. So when it does not come, we feel bereft, betrayed, and abandoned. For all the artistic renderings of the crucifixion, I think that the purported utterance of Jesus, "My God, why have you forsaken me?" is the despair of the banality of suffering. Without the transcendent spark, pain is less bearable. That, I think, is why we really need to help each other and work to ease pain wherever we can. It will take patience and creativity. Thanks.
I can remember at about age 3 or 4 making my very first collage. And I found some crayons and I created this masterpiece on the wallpaper in the dining room. I also glued some war rations coupons on that, so I had layered this thing, and then added pencil. Needless to say, my mother was not very happy, but after that, she made sure I had paper. And during the war, that was hard to come by. And so if she didn't have any paper, she would take an old dress pattern and give me the dress pattern. And I discovered then that, you know, that made great tracing paper. So I had a grand time creating when I was 3 or 4 years old. And I've always had art supplies around ever since. When I read Cheryl's list of questions to help prompt my thoughts about creativity or work, I was stumped. I have always made art. I've just never questioned it. And so what is my creative process? I have never understood that term applied to making art. When I hear the word process, I always think of cheese or meat. Processed art does not exist for me. It sounds like something that's forced or imposed or an assignment. My art today comes from or is inspired by most everything that I see or I encounter, especially nature or the process, there's that word again, of natural decay, a return to the earth. The underpinnings of reality, the scaffolding that lies under the surface of things, basically the guts of the matter, the emotions or feeling that lurk beneath the subject, those are the things that really interest me. My joy or satisfaction that comes from making art is to push myself, to make something unique, something new, to stretch my capabilities. If it is easy, simple, mundane, ordinary, without thoughtful content, I am instantly bored. I need the work to be complex, difficult, hard, a challenge, in order to keep me engaged. Sometimes I'm unable to achieve the vision of the idea that I have. Sometimes I pick out an idea that's just too hard, and I can't make it happen. And the finished work even if I persist in that, I consider it a failure in my eyes. I'm not satisfied, and I'm totally frustrated. I have never thought of art as a spiritual exercise, although I often get lost, somewhat like meditation. I think really what it is focused concentration that I'm experiencing. However, if I cannot get my idea or vision to work, or I'm unable to get the image I'm seeking, it is just plain work. And so making art to me is not creative, it's work. I'd get no benefits, spiritual or otherwise, from this. The total frustration and work that I'm dealing with sometimes is just aggravating. If there is any process, or I prefer the word method, is when one piece or idea leads to another. When some portion of the original idea shows up in subsequent work until an entire body of work is that's related, that has continuity, and the viewer can see that, I guess that can be called a process. It is, however, never my intent to sit down and produce a body of work. It just happens. Not always, but it is satisfying when it does. The piece that I have up on the wall here, the pencil piece of a fan made out of dove feathers that was a party favor at a dinner party I went to. All the women got that, one of those fans, and I thought it was the most gorgeous thing, and I came home and decided to draw it because I knew it was going to be hard. And I worked on that for a really long time, probably a couple of weeks. And it was so hard, I never did another one. I'm inclined to say that art has helped me during difficult times, for sure. But as I said, sometimes it is just work. I have in the past used my art to resolve difficult emotions, but not intentionally. For about a year after my daughter died, all of my work reflected that event and all of my feelings. But I never intended that. I was just working, and the theme showed up. Occasionally, an emotional theme will show up like it did then, but mostly when I'm finished with that idea, I'm finished with it, and I move on to something else. I've never said to myself, I think I'll sit down and paint some painful emotion. That's not how it works for me. Right now, because of my illness, I am stuck and dry and have absolutely nothing. And that is very frightening. When Betts was talking about aging and losing your creativity, I went, oh my God, is this what's happening? This particular situation for me has gone on for 2 years, and it's just weird, and it's scary, and alien, and I think to myself, what if I am done? What if there's nothing left? What if nothing ever comes again? I've tried to force myself. I have lots and lots of ideas, but not the inclination to sit down and carry them through. I just have no desire. I'll go out in the studio and sit. I hired somebody to come and help me clean up the place so it would be a more pleasant atmosphere. Nada. So right now I know I'm using all of my energy to heal, and that's not a bad thing. But this does not feel like me. I have always made art, and this is the first time in my life that I have not. Anyway, thank you very much.
Good morning. Cheryl Henry, our gifted chalice leader asked our group a number of questions regarding creativity, including what is your creative process and how do you get your juices going? And that's been a lot of what we've been talking about this morning. I'm going to focus on these two questions and hope that by sharing what works for me, you will gain some ideas of what might work for you. To begin with, I found I had to move out of my comfort zone and take some definitive actions. Get off this couch and do something, I would tell myself. How about taking a walk? Notice the forms of the clouds and watch the forms change. Notice that squadron of pelicans and that diving seagull, that complaining heron because I disturbed it as it fished. Feel the drum of your feet and hear the whispers of the wind. Once home, listen to music and do some stretching. Keep your physical juices going. Keeping them going can help result in a flow of creative juices. Going to the Chalice group really helped me. When Bev and I heard that there were some openings in the group, we thought, why not join? Sounds like a great idea. New experiences and getting to know others on a deeper level. I didn't anticipate that the group structure would be so impactful for me. Among other things, its structure includes listening carefully to others' joys and sorrows and not responding. Listen, and let go. Cheryl slammed a few of us on that. I don't think she ever hit me with it. I was too scared to threaten her. But this changed a 50-year-old habit I developed while practicing psychiatry. Any good psychiatrist has to be able to listen carefully and make a helpful response. And I had grown accustomed all those years to feeling I need to respond to the concerns of most anyone, and frequently did that all the time. Well, the group structure wouldn't allow me to do that. What a relief. I felt as if a load had been lifted off my shoulders and I could finally be an ordinary person and simply listen to others without having to respond. And with that change, I could hear and feel what others were saying about their creative pursuits, and you've heard them, and how important they were for them. So I decided to return to my painting again, a hobby I've enjoyed since I was a child, and I dropped when Hurricane Ike destroyed 6 original watercolors I just sent to a gallery in here in Galveston. Bev and I were living in San Antonio at the time. But within weeks of joining the Chalice group, I began to build my painting nest again by gathering all the materials I brought from San Antonio to our house. And thanks to Beverly's suggestion that we turn our guest bedroom into a hobby room, we have a good place to do the hobbies. Well, we do have a blow-up bed that we can blow up in case a visitor comes, but the bed loses its air within a couple of days. 4 final thoughts. Any good nest you build for your creative pursuits needs to pull you into the area. Decorative things you love. Good lighting. Greenery, of course. A comfortable chair, maybe a CD player, and or a small trickling fountain. Any and all things that pull you into that area and keep your creativity going. Number 2, positive forces that increase creativity include playfulness, curiosity, and enjoying your innate talents. Accent these traits and bring them to life every day if you can. By all means, join a group that supports you and your creative pursuits. If you find yourself lonely and you have no creative group like these folks, how can you, have the support and encouragement you need? Finally, know that creativity carries its own energy. Each creation you produce adds joy to your life and lightens the pathway you tread. And this energy from creativity makes you want to create even more. Thank you.
Thank you all for sharing, agreeing to share your creativity. Oh, no. Mine's that I just put some cards up there. Those are paintings I did and then made cards. And I didn't prepare anything to say like that. And we're late. But that's my new bull. I can't get away from birds and bulls. So that's Bull. That's Boss. He's on Farm Road 517 in Dickinson if you want to see him in person. I'm like Madeline with the tall birds. I can't get away from herons and egrets and things. So anything alive with eyes. Okay. Thank you all very much. It was great. That was just great. Okay.